This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
And good afternoon to everyone. This is Sunday Arts. You've got David Hunt and Neil here doing the show today.
Neil, you do have a surname.
I do. My surname is DeVars. I think everybody finds it very difficult to say, David. So
Hold on. You introduce yourself.
I know, and you didn't even use your surname. It's really terrible. I've just got so used to being introduced as Neil by you two that I've just gone along with it.
Right.
Well, yes, anyway, I do have a surname, and it's DeVars.
Right. And you're on Sunday Arts Magazine. And happy Pride March to everyone. The guys down there from Joy's perspective doing a brilliant job. Unfortunately, we had a little bit of a dropout there in the end, but the parade's still going. So if you're out and about in your car, unfortunately, we're finished broadcasting now. But we're going to entertain you with wonderful arts that's happening in Melbourne now or will be. And you went to a couple of midsummer events.
I did, David. This week, I thought I should go out there and sample some of the stuff that's going on. So on Friday night, I went and saw Dolly Diamond.
Yep.
And Blankety Blanks.
Yep.
And I think that was the night that there were the two hosts from ABC Breakfast, Virginia Trioli and Mike Rowland.
Virginia Trioli is one of my all-time favourite people on television. I just love her, and I'm so disappointed that I didn't go to that show. How was it?
Well, let me tell you, it was definitely worth it. Dolly was in fine form.
Yep.
And Virginia partook very well and actually got involved as well. So there was, we also had a few others. Like there was Dina Khoury and Tom Ballard and a couple of others that were there that, you know, I shouldn't forget about completely. But it was all, I think it was a little bit of the Virginia and Dolly show. And I think everybody was there to see that. So, and it was very, I think, and Virginia just took it all on board really quite well, all in the manner that was given. And I think the whole crowd loved it. They all seemed to really appreciate the show.
And I believe, just from social media, that pretty much all the shows were sold out.
That's exactly right. I mean, every single seat I saw was taken. Yeah. So I think, you know, that was definitely sold out. And Dolly did a great job.
Excellent. And what was the other show you saw?
The other one I saw last night was Glory Box Lucky 13.
Right.
Now, that was completely different from the Blankety Blanks. Let me tell you that. But it was I'd never heard of the show before. It was by Fiona Kanan Smith.
Yep. Well, she's legendary. And not just here in Australia, but around the world now.
Yeah, I discovered that afterwards because I realized that that this show has been toured quite obviously, and maybe that's why it was Lucky 13, might have been the 13th sort of time, because I think the Glory Box has been done several times before.
Yep.
And I think it's even won awards in like Cuba and a few other sort of overseas places.
So it's absolutely.
Yeah, and it was an interesting show. It was very avant-garde sort of cabaret.
Oh, well, more burlesque cabaret.
More like that. Yeah, it was more burlesque, but it was just, and some of the shows, some of the artists and the performances were quite confronting, but it was really worth sitting there through the whole show and watching.
What do you mean by confronting?
Well, let me tell you, David, and I don't want to be cliche gay male, but I haven't seen so many naked women before on stage or anywhere actually, and that was a little bit confronting. But just some of the messages that we're getting across, because it was all to do with gender, I think, and sort of positive body images, and so it was a little bit confronting from that point of view, but it was definitely worth seeing it, and also, and at the end of the day, it was really quite an enjoyable show altogether.
Right.
So, but it made you think a little bit, and that's what I mean by confronting. You know, sort of, it wasn't just look at it and have a good laugh at it all. It was really made you think about the whole message.
And one comment you made that one of the burlesque performers, she opened a bottle of wine with her vagina.
Yeah, that may be what I meant by confronting a little bit, David. I'm sounding very cliche, but I found that very confronting. But it was still entertaining the way it was all done, and it was done in such a way where the performer came on stage in a very sort of, you know, not, you know, she was very demure, very proper looking sort of young lady, and, you know, with a little handbag and dressed almost like a 60s retro sort of style, no, sorry, 50s retro. And then all of a sudden, this is what she does. You know, she opens the bottle and the corks. Is where it goes where it goes.
Fantastic, fantastic. So two amazing shows.
Yes, it was. It was definitely, and I think Glory Box is still on. I've got a few more days to go. I think, unfortunately, I think the Blankety Blanks is finished.
That's
now.
That's finished, yep.
Yeah, so if anybody is interested in seeing Glory Box, try and get tickets. It's at the Fairfax at the Arts Centre.
At the Arts Centre. Mm. Okay, now our first guest today is, would you call him a legend? I
think you certainly should.
We should? Okay, a legend in his own lunchbox, but no, he's not. This man has done so much amazing theatre in his day, but also produces a lot of his own shows, and he's here today to talk about just one of those. Trevor Ashley, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being in town, because you're a Sydney boy.
I am a Sydney boy, and I have just been down at the Pride March.
Oh, have you?
I just went and waved a little flag and saw lots of fabulous people out on the street, yeah. and have run into town to come and see you.
Great. Well, lucky that you had the chance to do that, because we've been here. But I'm going down to the big party tonight, of course.
Yes, yeah. Wonderful at the Emerson, is it?
What's going on?
I don't know. I'm not from here.
They're all up and down Fitzroy Street, all the venues,
fabulous.
and the big one is the park down at the end of Fitzroy Street.
Oh, wonderful!
As well.
Well, I might try and head there.
That's Catani Gardens. Isn't it?
Yes. Now, Trevor, you're a drag performer.
Yes.
But you do so much more than that. We always like, because it's a magazine style show, because you've never been on this.
I have not. You
on Friday Drive.
On Friday Drive, yes.
But not this show. So we like to do a bit of a background on who you are, how you got involved in this amazing craft that you do. Where did the voice come from? So, you know, like, when did you discover all this? How old?
When I was very young, actually. I don't think my parents didn't really know what to do with me, because I'm not really from a showbiz family at all.
Okay.
We have nobody in the family who is part of showbiz. And I think, you know, I sort of learnt very young that I had a voice, and I began to sing. And mum,
how old?
I was basically, as soon as I could speak, I sang.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And mum had me, like, I just started singing. And so she didn't know what to do. So she took me to Johnny Young Talent School. And I went and did the Young Talent Time School.
Was there one in Sydney,
There's lots in Sydney.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
So I used to go over to Milsons Point in Sydney and go and sing and dance of a morning from when I was 4 years old.
Right, okay.
And then I went into, I found a fabulous youth theatre called Shopfront in Sydney that I started going to when I was 5, and I actually started doing plays and learning music and all of that sort of stuff there, and I was 5 years old.
Wow.
And I didn't leave there until I was 16.
Okay.
I did 11 years there.
Well, so what happened at school? Did you, because it was back in the day where there wouldn't have been a lot of the arts at school per se.
No, mum had me learn piano and singing for a lot of the there's a lot of noise.
Well, it's Chinese New Year.
It's Chinese New Year. That's what it is. I learned piano and singing and all of that from quite a young age, and that was, you know, outside of school. But then when I went to high school, there was a lot of bands and that sort of thing. But we didn't actually have a, like, school play or anything. So I used to do all of that at Shopfront.
Right, okay.
And perform there.
And so, therefore, by the time you left school, you had decided that showbiz is what you wanted?
Yes, and I actually accelerated music in year 11. So I finished my HSC in music in year 11 and as a piano player and a singer.
Right.
And then I went on in year 12. I had a lot less subjects, so I just added everything else into my life. So I was doing school spectacular, talent development project, amateur musicals, Shopfront. I was doing everything
right.
In my final year at school, because I'd already done 3 units of my HSC. I don't know, what do you call it down here? It's not HSC. It's not even that anymore. It's not even HSC in Sydney. I don't think
year 12.
I think they changed it around
12. Yeah. So I did all of that, and I told my my parents, I didn't want to go and audition for NIDA or WAPA or anything like that. I wanted to have a year to see whether I would work. And so at age 18, I said, well, look, give me a year. And if I don't have any jobs and if I'm not making money in this industry, then I'll go and audition for a university. And I never did.
Right.
So I started working once I was 18.
Good on you.
And that was it. I've never stopped.
Well, so you were part of Les Mis,
yes,
when it did its Australian tour.
Yeah, 2 years.
2 years ago was that?
Wow. It was a year ago we finished, but right, we were in Melbourne 2 years ago.
Yeah, and it, because it opened here in Melbourne, didn't it? And it was just, it's such a big event, wasn't it?
It was huge.
And, yeah, but before that, you were producing most of your shows yourself, weren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, and I still do.
Yeah.
I've sort of had a balance of producing and then doing a big musical for a couple of years and then going back to producing and then going and doing a big musical for a couple of years.
So what's the excitement about producing your own show? What is it that you love?
It's great to have complete control. I'm a bit of a control freak.
Oh,
I always find
that explains it.
That's why you're trying to take over the panel.
I've always found that you're not necessarily going to have a career if other people have their say. And so you have to make it yourself, and that's kind of how I've always done it. So I've created everything myself.
Yep. Now you've taken drag to a whole new level, and the wonderful thing about it is that you're part of the new generation of drag per se, where you actually sing.
Yeah.
And you've got an amazing voice, and your range is incredible, because there's one show that you did, I think, was it part of Midsummer a couple of years ago, where you play all different divas?
Oh, yeah, that was a few years ago now. Yeah, I'm Every Woman.
Yeah.
Yeah, that Dean Bryant directed.
And I love it because all you do is change the wig.
Change hair.
And it would go into a rubbish bin after each one you turn around, and then bang, you would be...
I'd be someone else.
Somebody else. Mm. A tough role, you know, like producing yourself, because...
Yeah.
Apart from putting the show on, yeah, it's putting bums on seats as well.
Yes.
At the end of the day.
Yeah.
Do you cope well with all that pressure?
Do you know, I've done it for so long now that I think, you know, everyone has hits and everyone has misses, and it's a tough thing. I had a great experience with when I did Little Orphan Trashley here at the Comedy Theatre. I produced that.
And who was in that?
And that was Rhonda Birchmore and Gary Sweet.
Awesome.
And Reese Bowbridge. It was a hoot. It was a very funny show.
Quite risque.
Very risque.
And you had a problem with the name to begin with?
I did. When we called it Tranny, everybody went me. It was just at the cusp of when that all changed.
Okay.
You know, it was one of those, oh, okay, is this wrong to say now, is this? Okay. And then, you know, and then all the Annie people tried to sue me as well. Doing that show, you know, it wasn't doing so well, and the wonderful Mike Walsh called me up and said, Trevor, what are you doing before your show? And I said, oh, I'm just at home, and I'll come into the theatre. He said, right, come in an hour earlier. I want to see you. And he lives across the road from the Comedy. And I went upstairs, and he sat down, and he was like, you know what? You've got your name on the front of a theatre. You're doing all of this yourself. He said, you have to understand that it's still successful. He said, even if you're not selling enough seats, it's still successful because you're still out there and you're still doing it. And for the most of the public who know, that's what they're seeing, and they know that you're up there. And he said, Barry Humphries didn't have, how old are you? And I think I was 33 or something at the time. And he said, well, Barry Humphries didn't have his name on the front of the Comedy Theatre at 33, so keep going. Mm. So, you know, you get wonderful people like that who help and encourage you.
So. Yeah. So where do the ideas come from? You know, like, do they too many or...
I don't know. They just... But look, some things, it takes a while. Honestly, I have a million ideas, but then I always hang on one will come up and I'll go, that's the new show. I know that's the new show. And so that's... sort of what I've built, and in my brain it just sort of ticks over, and sometimes it takes, you know, a year or two to get that show up, but it's great when it does, because you see your vision
now
on stage.
We're going to play a track from the show that you're here to talk about, which you're doing at the Opera House Sydney for Mardi Gras. And what's the person's name? What's her name?
Shirley Bassey.
Oh, that's it.
Dame Shirley.
You're on Joy 94.9 with Trevor Ashley on Sunday Arts Magazine.
There's something evolving. Wherever they come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
Joy. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Joy 94.9 Sunday Arts, and we've got here in the studio Trevor Ashley. We've been chatting to you about your background, Trevor. Now, before we start again, I just want, David, we just received an SMS. So I thought I'd just read it out.
Now, sure.
It's actually hasn't given, nobody's, they haven't sent their name, but hopefully you'll know who you are. And they're just talking about Dolly Diamond. Now, it says here, it's time Dolly Diamond got her own show on mainstream TV. She's brilliant. Florence Whitty. Now, I wonder if maybe Dolly sent that.
You reckon? I wouldn't put it past Dolly, but
she'd be marching, wouldn't she?
Yeah. Of course, that's right.
Well, probably getting over the blankety blanks. Trevor, is it something that you would look at down the track, you know, like doing something like television?
I'd love to, and we've sort of starting to work on some stuff, actually, hopefully to, you know, get that up in the next year or so.
What format?
Look, I'd like to do a bunch of different things, of course. I'd like to do a drama. I've got an idea for one, and I'm hoping that I will, like, when I say a drama, it's a comedy, obviously. But yeah, I'd love to do something like that. That would be great. I'd love to have a scripted sort of comedy show, sitcom.
Yeah.
Could be really fun. Well, I'd love that.
And you'd be perfect in it. So Diamonds Are for Trevor.
Yes.
We know it here in Melbourne because it was part of the Midsummer Festival about 2 years ago, wasn't
Three.
It? 3 years ago. And it played at the Arts Centre.
Yeah, in the Playhouse.
And orchestra.
Yes.
Costumes.
Yes.
Are amazing.
It's beautiful.
So you're bringing it back?
I am. I'm doing it in Sydney at the Opera House for Mardi Gras. It's two nights before the party and parade.
Right.
In the concert hall of the Sydney Opera House. So it's my first time doing that by myself, which is very exciting.
When was the last time you did this particular show?
It would have been Midsummer, three years ago. I haven't done the show since then. And we're actually making a lot of changes. So it's very exciting. We've got a 24-piece orchestra, a wonderful conductor who I'm very excited to be working with, who I can't reveal just yet who it is, but it's pretty exciting. And, 22 Bassi songs and an amazing, 24-piece orchestra in the concert hall of the Opera House. So I'm very, very excited.
How many costumes?
There's sort of like 3-4 because I don't actually leave the stage. It's quite hard.
Yep.
There's like sort of these amazing Tim Chappell designed the costumes, who of course designed the costumes for Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, and he is amazing. So he designed these beautiful gowns that sort of rip away and do special things.
I love this one because we all know Shirley Bassey, how like she was literally a drag queen, but she wasn't.
Basically.
Because she was a woman. And there's one that the train of it goes on forever, which is absolutely hysterical
on stage.
It
is funny. It's a 25-metre boa. Yes. Just keeps going and going and going and going. I love it. Yeah. I love it.
So many people from Melbourne go up to Sydney for that week.
Mm.
So it's beautifully placed.
It is. It's going to be wonderful. It's going to be a great event. And we've actually already sold half the tickets. So there's only half the room left,
right.
With 6 weeks to go. So it's pretty exciting, and I know it'll be a really wonderful evening to, be in Sydney, to go to a show at the Opera House. If you've never been to see a show at the Opera House, it'll be a wonderful night and it's the only Mardi Gras event at the Sydney Opera House this year. So it's quite exciting.
And so you book tickets, of course, through Mardi Gras.
You can book them from the Sydney Opera House website, which is sydneyoperahouse.com, if I'm not mistaken. Sydneyoperahouse.com.
Everyone can sort that
out. Yes, I'm sure you can figure it out.
So what, why have you brought it back? What's the fascination with this show and, to make it bigger and better?
You know, it's one of my favourite things that I've ever done. And because I've done it less than I've done anything, mainly because of the size of it, it's such a big show. And, of course, I've now made it even bigger because that's what I do.
So you can spend more money as a producer.
I can spend more money doing it.
And
I know,
stress
exactly.
About ticket sales.
Well, no, I'm fine. I'm very relaxed. But this one now with adding 10 members to the orchestra and all of that is great. But I decided to do it because partly because it was Shirley's 80th birthday just a few weeks ago. And
I saw a photo of you on the steps of the Opera House with a birthday cake.
Yeah, with a birthday cake. but it was Bassie's birthday. And, you know, I love this music, and I feel like that if you're going to do... This is a show I've literally only ever performed 6 times. So I did 4 shows here in Melbourne, once in Sydney and once in Darwin.
Right.
And that's it. That's all.
How did it go in Darwin?
Yes. I did an outdoor concert, and it was at the, I did it with the Darwin Symphony Orchestra.
Right.
And I had a fabulous huge orchestra and a lawn. And we had about 2,000 people on the lawn
wow.
at the casino in Darwin, and they all came to see me do Bassie. And it was really exciting. It was sold out, and the standing ovations, and amazing. It was just one of the most special nights, and I got to go up and, you know, be in Darwin and rehearse with the orchestra and all of that.
Right.
So, okay. But it's a great, you know, it's just one of those shows that I think, anybody who loves that songbook, that Shirley Bassey song.
We know them
everyone knows all the songs. And we're adding a few new ones that maybe she hasn't ever sung.
Right.
Maybe she, shouldn't. but we're doing a few things like that, and we've got, you know, just beautiful, beautiful players and orchestration. I do hope that we'll make it back to Melbourne with it too.
Oh, look, because everyone was raving about it, and you do such a great job, and you mimic her so well with all the hand movements and all that lovely quiver in her voice. Would you call it a quiver? I suppose it would be.
Oh, it's just her giant vibrato, Dale. Yeah. She's like, oh, that's hilarious. Wow.
And has she aware, is she aware of what you've done? Or
I have had messages from people who are friends of hers, and they have said that she knows. But she doesn't really like impersonators.
If
you watch the they did this fabulous special, I don't know if you got to see it, on Christmas Eve, and it was Shirley Bassey and David Walliams, and he interviewed her, and it was for her 80th, which of course was in January, but they did this fabulous TV special. And at one point, David Walliams says to her, "So you've had a lot of people impersonate you," and the look on her face, and you go, okay, she's not into it. That's all right. It's fine. But she'll probably never come back here. I would be surprised if she did.
Yeah.
She doesn't perform so much anymore, but though the voice is still there and still extraordinary.
But the thing is, though, the reason she probably screwed her nose up at the impersonators is because most of them would be pretty tragic over the years. You think about
that clip of Matt Lucas doing, she doesn't have the range, darling. She doesn't have the range. Have you seen that sketch from Little Britain?
No.
It's hilarious. And it's him being Shirley Bassey saying, they say, what about, you know, Kiri Takanawa? Oh, no, darling, she doesn't have the range. And every answer was, she doesn't have the range.
Okay.
And then they say, and what about Shirley Bassey? No, she doesn't have the range. And it's very camp.
Right.
Yes, but they played that sketch in front of Bassey, and she was like,
Trevor, thank you so much for coming in
today.
Thank
you for having me.
We might see you back down in St Kilda tonight.
Yes, I would love that. I'm thrilled to be down here during midsummer, and I've been seeing some great theatre and really enjoying it.
Excellent. And the show that you're doing at the Opera House?
March 2nd, Diamonds Are for Trevor, in Mardi Gras week there, just 2 nights before, and at the Sydney Opera House, and you can book through there.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Trevor Ashley, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're on Joy 94.9.
Joy.
It's been calling out to me, that is where I should be.
That was Lanterns by Birds of Tokyo, and this is Sunday Arts on 94.9. So welcome back. Now to our guest this afternoon. We did have Trevor Ashley before. Now our next guest is Kanan Breen, who's from the Victoria Opera. And
he's an opera's naughty boy, I'm reading about him.
I saw that, and I'm not quite, I want to know what What did you do, Kate, to deserve that little
Well,
party?
I've, you know, come audition season, I'm the first one on my knees.
Oh, okay.
That explains how I keep myself current.
Boom, boom,
boom, so popular.
Boom, boom. Yes. Yes.
Well, even to the extent, Neil, where you said, we're turning the mics on, so please keep quiet. And he kept on talking. So he's annoyed. Imagine what he would have been like, a naughty little schoolboy.
I got to the punchline.
I'm sorry to cut you off, Kate.
Right.
Now, opera. We were talking off air how it's a changing world and people involved in opera are very different. They're not as stuffy as they used to be. Mm. But when did it all start for you?
I have said it many times and it's terribly boring, but I'll say it again. It was a complete accident. I consider myself an entertainer, not an opera singer. The opera singing is an aspect of what I bring to bear on my audience. I guess I am most identified with the operatic stage, and that's wonderful, but it was a complete accident. I grew up in Melbourne, in Glen Iris, and next door to where my parents lived was a wonderful music singing teacher, David Ross Smith.
Oh, yes.
And not David Roger Smith.
Yeah, I know who you mean, yep.
And I was at university doing a drama and dance course.
Oh, as you
and
do.
A dear friend of mine, Luke Gallagher, was auditioning for what was then a production, I think, of Joseph Technicolor Dreamcoat or something, and he said, oh, you can sing, you should come along as well. And being an idiot and, you know, being young and, you know, just feeling invincible, I thought, oh, that's marvellous, I'll do that. So we went along, and sure enough, it had turned into Man of La Mancha, and no one had told us. And I couldn't read music, I didn't know what the hell I was doing, so I sang Happy Birthday for my audition, and they said to me, are you putting that voice on? And I said, no, that's how I sing. And they said, oh, well, come back. So here's the song we'd like you to sing. Sing it. So I sang it, and they all laughed and said, oh, you've got the job. And then flash forward to the first day of rehearsals for Man of La Mancha, and I sang, and they all said, is that your real voice, or are you putting that on? And I said, why do you keep asking that? And they said, because you sound like some sort of old opera singer, and you're a young man. This is unusual. We didn't expect that voice to come out of your head. And so I sort of freaked out and went home and said to my mother, you have to go next door and ask David Ross Smith to teach me how to sing, because people are saying I sound like an opera singer and I don't want to. And so I went and then the night before I had to audition for him, I went out and smoked a pack of Camel Filterless and drank 8 bottles of red wine because I was so nervous.
Smoking is bad for you.
Oh, we don't like it. It's all dreadful. Yes. It's all dreadful.
And especially that brand that you mentioned as well.
Oh, it's all dreadful. So I turned up sounding like Bonnie Tyler, and I don't know, I can't even remember what I tried to sing, but he said, oh, there's the beginnings of something there. Yes, right. I could work with that.
Now, did Luke Gallagher get into that production?
We were both in Man of La Mancha. Luke was in the pack rape scene. I wasn't. I was playing a priest.
Oh, as you do.
I was the padre, but I thought padre was Spanish or Italian for rapist, so I thought I was in the rape scene as well. I wasn't. Yes, Luke got in up to his elbows in that rape scene. It was extraordinary.
Now, what happened then? Did you the training?
Well, I was doing a Bachelor of Secondary Education in Drama and Dance at Rusden, Deakin University Rusden, which doesn't exist anymore, which is very sad. And so concurrent with finishing that degree, I just kept having lessons with David Ross Smith in Glen Iris, and then he was singing with the Victoria State Opera Chorus at the time, and he said, I think you should audition for them. Richard Duval, who has just recently passed away last week, was in charge of the company at the time, and he was a wonderful, much like Richard Mills is to the Victorian Opera now, Richard Duval was to the Victoria State Opera then, very encouraging and nurturing of young singers. He said, yes, please do come in and sing in the chorus of Il Trovatore, which I did, and from there someone on the music staff suggested I audition for the Schools Company program, which is a year-long touring, short, condensed version of traditional operas that goes around to mostly primary schools, which Luke and I ended up doing together.
Okay.
And you can imagine what that was like. It was wonderful. And it really was. And I did that for 2 years, and then the merger took place between Victoria State Opera and the then Australian Opera to produce Opera Australia. Mm-hmm. And I was just one of the babies that kind of sloshed from one bath into the other while no one was looking. A lot of babies went out in the bathwater, but I managed to stay contained within the mechanism. And suddenly I was an employee of Opera Australia, and I still, 20 years later, sort of go, kind of snuck in here. I wonder when they're going to figure out that I'm not meant to be here.
Come on.
You've probably earned your place by now.
Bless them.
So, travelling the world?
I have travelled. I have sung in the States and in London as well. I did a Baz Luhrmann's La Boheme on Broadway.
Right.
Just before it closed.
Yep.
In fact, my first performance was a matinee, and we had a company meeting in the auditorium between the matinee and the evening performance to announce that we were closing in 2 weeks. And everyone burst into tears except me and the new Mozzetto, who just sort of looked at each other and went, oh, shit, was it us? Am I allowed to swear? I just did.
You can get away with that one.
Yeah.
So back in Australia?
Back in Australia. I've had a tremendous run of luck with Opera Australia, Opera Queensland, and Victorian Opera. I sort of bounce mostly between the three of them when I'm not performing on the cabaret platform.
Do you do a bit of cabaret?
I do a bit of cabaret with Jackie Dark. We have a unit called Strange Bedfellows, which rear their incredibly ugly heads from time to time and sort of take stock of the world and then vanish down their wormholes for as long as it takes to get over that experience.
So why do you do something like cabaret? Because it's so different?
Exactly, because it's a tremendous tonic to the quite necessary regimentation of the operatic art form, and it's just tremendous to generate one's own work and be the point at which the buck stops on all fronts. But I mean, it is impossible as an Australian opera singer to be the master of your own destiny, mm-hmm. to really select the repertoire that you sing, the costume you wear, the directors you work with, the musicians, your colleagues. It's all prescribed, predetermined before you turn up and yep. do the gig. So it's nice to give oneself the opportunity to have carte blanche at the musical smorgasbord and pick and choose and run riot and really recharge the joy battery, and that'll do.
Because I was going to say, we mentioned it again, it was off air, that opera has changed so much, where it used to be very, a hand would come out as a gesture and then it would go back in. There was no movement on stage, where now it's quite physical, isn't it, opera? You had to be a lot fitter, there's a lot more movement, and it's a lot more exciting for the audience to go to opera.
Well, certainly Victorian Opera, who I'm working with at the moment, are at the forefront of they're certainly not reinventing the art form, but they're examining it from many different directions. And there's, if you look at their seasons over the last couple of years, there's an extraordinary eclectic offering that they make. There's everything from exceptionally grandiose Bellinis, Sonnambulas, Jessica Pratt singing Lucia de Lammermoor, directed by Cameron Menzies, who I'm working with at the moment. Lots of forays into youth opera and lots of work with new Australian composers and Australian librettists, Australian directors, Australian designers, all in an effort to keep what can potentially be quite an antiquated, static art form evolving and interesting and engaging for as many audiences as possible.
But I think it has to.
Adapt or die, exactly right.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. We'll come back after this short break because Victoria Opera is doing something a little bit different, aren't they? And you're part of it.
I am.
You're on Joy 94.9. It's Sunday Arts Magazine.
You take joy to the beach. You take joy in your car. You take joy all summer long. Now, Joy wants to take you and a friend to Mardi Gras in Sydney. Let Joy sponsors Virgin Airlines fly you up, Airbnb provide the comforts for your stay, and GoGet drive you around in style. Then have the time of your life and celebrate the Mardi Gras parade with a view money can't buy at the Joy 94.9 VIP broadcast. So, want Joy to take you to Mardi Gras? Donate $5 at joy.org.au by Friday, February 17. There's no limit on entries, so enter as many times as you like. The joy of summer. The joy of Mardi Gras. T's and C's at joy.org.au.
Joy 94.9.
We're back on Sunday Arts, and we've got Kanan Breen with us still. And Kanan, and you were talking a little bit about your sort of your background, your interest in opera, and mm-hmm. And also a few other things like cabaret. But as David mentioned, you've got something happening at the moment at the Recital Centre. Tell us a little bit about that.
Victorian Opera are putting on a quite unusual piece starring the luscious and extraordinary Meow Meow and myself.
It's called, what a combination.
What a combination. We may just, the curtain may go up and we may both just explode in a sort of puff of feathers and sequins and sweat.
And what's it called?
It's called Tis Pity.
Right. Not a very well known piece.
Well, it's a new piece. That would be why.
Ah, okay.
Some might even say that Meow and I don't know it that well yet. But yeah, we have got...
Or to explain it.
Well, to explain why I would say that, Meow and myself and three extraordinary young male dancers are being whipped into shape by Cameron Menzies, our director, on a Richard Mills composition, an original composition, a piece about the progress of working girls and boys through history, their triumphs and their tribulations, the differences and the similarities between working girls and boys across many different eras through history.
Right.
And as you can imagine, in attempting to create that flavour and infuse that through Richard Mills's composition, it is a rehearsal room that is quite full of ideas and movement and deep thought and hilarity and everything in between. So it's a little bit like pinning clouds down the last couple of weeks in crystallising this most extraordinary song cycle, which is essentially what Richard Mills has composed. It's been fascinating and emotionally and physically exhausting in the best possible way.
Yeah. But how exciting must it be for you to be part of something that's new?
And very exciting.
And the fact is that you're not following the formula that a normal opera follows.
Well, that's something that always appeals to me. I've done quite a bit of contemporary opera and new compositions across the years. And, of course, I've been a fan of Meow Meow since Sheila Florence wore pantaloons.
Right.
I mean, really, she's an extraordinary theatrical beast.
Okay, I was going to ask you about her. So, you know, like, what's she like in the rehearsal room?
She's a dynamo and a deep thinker and a quick thinker and spontaneous, considered. She's all things at once, and it's, you can smell the rubber burning.
Okay.
It's watching her and Cameron, they have a quite long established theatrical shorthand between the two of them because they've worked together so often. So watching the two of those brains bouncing together is wonderful, and then you add Richard Mills into the mix, and occasionally I get a word in myself. So there's a real dynamism to the rehearsal room, which
right.
is infectious.
Five people in the cast?
Meow, myself, three dancers, and 35 in the orchestra on stage, conducted by Richard Mills.
Right, so they're on stage with you.
They're on stage with us.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Well, because we're performing in the recital centre.
Right.
And there is no disguising the fact that we are performing in a recital centre, so we're celebrating the fact that that the orchestra are part of the spectacle.
So is there a set at all?
Yes, there is. Their transformation is a huge part of the story that we tell, and so the space will be transformed and utilised in daring ways.
Yeah, because that was the one thing I was thinking. How can you do it? Because it is just really a performance stage per se, isn't it, for orchestras and the like?
Well, this project exists to test the theory of how far one can reinvent a recital centre into a space wherein play and transformation and theatricality can come to the fore.
Yeah. How do you find it with a new piece and the audience not really having normal opera, there half the audience know exactly what's going on and they know the music. In this case, that's not happening, is it?
Well, no, it's a brand new piece, and so obviously an audience who comes along to a brand new piece are, in essence, taking a, not a risk necessarily, but prepared to put themselves into hands they've never been fondled by before, to create an exceptionally clumsy image there. And I think that's a, you know, that's exactly the sort of audience that Meow and myself welcome with open arms, because chaos and spontaneity are huge aspects of both of our performance style and our performance history. And certainly audiences who come to the Recital Centre are music lovers first and foremost, and presumably have a breadth of musical interest. So you know, it's a safe bet that when you come and see a Meow Meow show in the Recital Centre, you're going to get quite a bit of razzle dazzle for your dollar. And also some real musical depth.
And that's the exciting part of it. You know, a new piece, you know, the new YouTube performers who are just, you know, like very different, but very, very at the top of the game. You know, like, what a treat.
Thank you very much.
I can't wait.
I have nothing to add to that.
Can't wait to see it.
It's a, it is going to be an extraordinary, it's all too short a season. We open, this coming Saturday night.
Right.
With three shows to follow, the Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday of the following week.
Yep.
And, it's going to really rock some socks.
Because that was my next question as well. With most other operas, they then usually tour, or you get an opportunity to do it somewhere else. Yeah, it's a bit disappointing that you put all this time and effort into all the rehearsal and the performance, and then bang, it's over. And you know, like, it needs to, you know, and something new and fresh like this needs to go on the road.
Well, there's always potential for things like that to happen, but that brings people's schedules and what have you into play. I'm sure that there will be life in this show, but there, it's not for me to say when and if that, that would happen, but I'm sure that there would be interest in many quarters.
Right. So what have you got coming up next?
I fly to Adelaide the day after we finish here to take part in Barry Kosky's
Oh, my God,
Soul.
I knew exactly what you were going to say.
Did
when you,
you
said flying to Adelaide. I knew where you were going with that.
I could have been, I could have said I was going to Cousin Murgatroyd's funeral.
No, the Adelaide Arts Festival is around the corner. We spoke to Neil Armfield before Christmas about this production. I went to a media launch for it a long time ago as well. How exciting must it be? Yeah, like, just tell everyone what it's about.
Well, the Adelaide Arts Festival or Soul?
No, Soul.
Well, Soul was originally produced at, God, was it ENO? I don't know.
I can't remember now.
18 months ago, I think it was. Yep. Christopher Purvis plays Soul, who I have a connection with because I did a Philip Glass opera in Brisbane 2 years ago called The Perfect American, which was a telling of the last days of the life of Walt Disney, and Chris Purvis played Walt Disney, and he was, the hair on the back of my neck is going up just thinking about his performance, and I played, I did a teeny tiny cameo in that opera where I played Andy Warhol.
Right. Wow.
In Soul.
Yeah.
Chris plays Saul, and I have a teeny tiny cameo again, very close to the end of the show, The Witch of Endor.
Right.
And,
but what a production. Visually.
Oh, I know.
Look, people, go out there and look at it on YouTube because there's some footage.
Yeah.
It is spectacular.
It is
isn't
the
it?
Antithesis of the cardboard cutout opera star that we alluded to previously. Barry is an extraordinarily demanding and intelligent director.
Because it's a feast, isn't it?
Yes.
And everyone, it's sort of, what the dress manner would be, Marie Antoinette, you know, like that sort of,
Versailles.
But loosely, loosely on that. Just spectacular. I hear ticket sales for it are really big.
It's tricky to get your hands on one.
Yeah. And I know so many, Melbourne people go to Adelaide for, the arts festival over there, but this one is going to be a big one. I unfortunately can't make it, but oh gosh, it sounds amazing. So good on you for being part of that as well.
Yeah,
God, look
exciting.
At you, Andy Warhol. My God. Thank you for coming in today.
My pleasure.
So, Victoria Opera, What's it called?
Tis Pity.
When does it open?
We open this Saturday.
Oh, do you know
night.
This? Yeah.
Do I know? I do know this.
You can remember it offhand.
We perform on the 4th, 6th, 7th and 8th of February.
Whereabouts?
At the Melbourne Recital Centre in the Elizabeth Murdoch Hall. Bookings through
Recital Centre.
Yeah.
Easy. Thank you so much for coming in.
Pleasure.
And can't wait to hear about what it was like over in Adelaide being part of this extravaganza.
Tremendous.
You're on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
Okay, you're listening to Joy 94.9, and this is Sunday Arts with David and Neil.
And so, that's it.
Yeah, David, that's just the hour's
a, so a one-hour show today. Because of Pride March, of course. And I hope everyone's having a wonderful time down there. I'm on my way there as we speak. What an amazing show. Trevor Ashley, of course.
Exactly.
Diamonds Are for Trevor, which is a Shirley Bassey show at the Sydney Opera House on March 2nd, part of Mardi Gras
Festival.
And
Kane and Breen, we just spoke to. The Victorian Opera is doing Tis Pity at the Recital Centre from 4th to the 8th of February with Meow Meow.
And we'll be back next week with the normal two-hour show with Brendan Michael Bale. I'm sure he's out there partying like there's no tomorrow, as he always does. See you, everyone.
Goodbye.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.